Next case, which is United States versus Powell. Mr. Brand.
May it please the court, Jeff Brandt on behalf of defendant appellant Marcus Powell. Marcus Powell was deprived of his rights to due process and a fair trial when the district court wrongly admitted evidence and when the jury otherwise heard inadmissible evidence, all leading to what we submit is unfairly prejudicial verdicts. The district court first erred in admitting three prior bad acts to show intent. Charges here were that Mr. Powell distributed cocaine on two dates in January 2008. The government sought to introduce three uncharged acts or offenses, all involving Mr. Powell and the CI confidential informant, Darnell Yarborough. The briefs do a good job of telling what those events are. In summary, they're all drug dealing. It's either drug dealing or talking about drug dealing. Although inadmissible to show intent, because Mr. Powell did not put his mental state at issue, the district court allowed it. Mr. Powell submits that alone is reversible error. The government responds that, look, the district court gave a limiting instruction. Well, limiting instructions for when the evidence is admissible for one purpose but not another. And in this case, we believe the evidence isn't admissible at all.
There's also a harmless error argument here in terms of your client is on tape, making the arrangements, on video, present at the scene, etc.
There's lots of evidence that Mr. Powell's in the drug dealing business. There's lots of evidence. Maybe that there was a conspiracy. He wasn't charged with conspiracy. When it comes to who dealt the drugs or whether Mr. Powell was aiding or abetting, we submit the evidence was not overwhelming. That's why he went to trial. Who did it? Not what his intent was, not what he did in the past, not what he did 2 months later, not what he did 4 months later. On this date, does that videotape show you, the jury, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Mr. Powell committed the offenses? And we very respectfully submit that, yes, while there's a lot of evidence, that evidence is not overwhelming that he did it, the distribution of cocaine based on
in terms of hand to hand, because he's obviously on tape arranging these deals. Right?
And that's why the intent is obviously not an issue. We're not saying hand to hand must be shown, but we submit that it's silly for me to say there's no evidence that he didn't do it. But to say that it's a harmless error, we believe the evidence is not overwhelming that he's the one doing it or abetting or abetting.
Or he is A1, yes, who's doing it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
We submit that those are three errors right off the bat that are reversible and in favor of finding that there are two or more errors that would lead to due process and fair trial errors. But beyond that, the government presented evidence of a historical connection between Mr. Powell and another drug dealer, Ricardo Mason. And we submit that it may be okay to establish this historical connection and then later on not talk about how Mr. Mason pleaded guilty because Mr. Yarborough cooperated with the government and was willing to testify against him and made undercover buys from him. But the government can't do both. If it's going to insist on saying this is a joint investigation, if it's going to insist on saying they were partners at one point, if it's going to insist on saying, you know, when we went after these guys, we went after them because they were both together. They're, you know, it's a joint investigation. We're going after those drug dealers that have a connection with each other. Once you've done that, it's not proper to then say the only witness the government had, eyewitness, non-government agent's the wrong word, because in fact he is an agent, but the only person there is an eyewitness to then say, oh, by the way, that guy, he pleaded guilty too. And the government cites a case, I think it's Hammonds, starts with an H, and I'm forgetting it off the top of my head. Yes, the government's allowed to rehabilitate its witness, but it's allowed to rehabilitate its witness when the witness is talking about other cases, not directly related to this one, where that witness has helped to prove that that witness is not after the defendant in this case.
But that's where the limited instruction, if one takes them seriously, is relevant, right? So his evidence about Mason, or the evidence that Mason was convicted, it does tend to show that Yarbrough is reliable, and so it is, it could be admissible for that purpose with an instruction telling the jury. I mean, you could argue that the jury wouldn't, that the limiting instruction would be impotent. I understand that argument. But you had said before that the limiting instruction was improper because there was no possible legitimate use of the evidence.
For the prior bad acts.
So you would have to argue that even with the limiting instruction, it's unduly prejudicial.
That, Your Honor, and the fact that the district court judge has already found that this is an error. The government has not appealed the district court judge's ruling that was wrong. You're up here suggesting to the jury that the jury should find him guilty because if Yarbrough's good enough to make Mr. Mason plead guilty, by gum, it's good enough to do it here.
So you don't need a trial, you just need Yarbrough, right?
I don't know what a limiting instruction does. And even if there is a limiting instruction, we say it's an error that's reversible, add it to the three prior bad acts, and we have what Mr. Powell respectfully submits is a due process and fair trial error. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Brandt. Ms. Scott?
And I'd just like to first address what Mr. Brandt argued about the 404B evidence. I would note that when the motion in limine was filed, we weren't aware at the time that the defendant was going to argue that someone else did it. The evidence was we asked to include the evidence because we wanted to show that Powell had the intent on these two specific occasions to sell this dope to Yarbrough. And by showing that intent, we showed that he had sold it to him in the past, or actually had fronted him dope in the past, and that even after the two buys, he had contacted Yarbrough about possibly getting money from Yarbrough to go buy drugs, and they had additionally set up a second or third deal,
later,
which was recorded.
After the fact, 404B evidence. After the fact, 404B evidence raises a lot of separate problems that haven't actually been raised here. How did he put his intent at issue? How did Powell put his intent at issue?
Well, I think in this case, it's when the government has to show that the defendant intentionally did something, intent is always at issue.
You were just relying on the general rule.
Right.
That a not guilty plea puts intent at issue.
Right. That's what we were relying on when we initially filed the motion in limine. Again, as I said before,
does the prosecution ever ask a defendant, or does the defendant ever say to the prosecutor, I'm not going to argue a lack of intent. I promise not to. If he made that commitment, then there would be no justification for the government presenting evidence of intent.
But, Your Honor, this court has held that even if the defendant agrees to stipulate to intent, it's still the government still has the right to present evidence regarding intent.
Well, what if the defendant stipulates that there is no issue of intent in this case, that if you find that I handled the drugs or was involved in any way, then I grant.
I believe that the government still has the right to prove intent. The government, the defendant cannot...
What, can't stipulations in a criminal trial remove issues from contention?
That's correct, and that's issues such as whether he's a felon, things like that. But here, if the defense was allowed to say, look, I'm not going to contest intent, so you guys can't put on any evidence on intent, then the defense is telling the government, limiting the evidence the government can put on regarding its case. The government has to show intent. And by showing these three prior instances.
No, why? Why would you have to instruct the jury on intent if there's no issue?
I think the issue here was that Mr. Powell's defense was that he didn't intentionally distribute the drug to somebody else because to Yarbrough because
somebody
else did.
No, I understand. My question is if a defendant, because he doesn't want to face this 404B evidence, says, I'm not going to contest intent. You don't have to ask the jury to find that it was intentional. I don't want that in it. What's wrong with that?
Honor,
I mean, these limited instructions, does anyone take them seriously?
I believe they do, Your Honor. I mean,
I understand that. You're a juror. You've heard something. How do you remove it from your brain?
Well, the thing is, Your Honor, not only did they have the limited instruction, but I believe that under the whole 404B analysis, the government didn't dwell on the evidence. It simply presented the evidence. It was credible evidence. It was within the time. It was similar in nature and in time. And it was not unfairly prejudicial. As the court, this court has said before, it affords special deference to the district court's Rule 403 balancing test. The court found here that the government actually sought to introduce four episodes to show that Powell knew that cocaine base was an illegal drug, which is another element the government has to prove.
But that just opens the door to all the defendant's entire criminal history. I mean, you're saying in every case, in every drug case, the government can introduce the entire history of his drug activities to show that he knew this was an illegal drug.
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think that that's...
You know cocaine was illegal?
I don't think that that's...
Well, that's what you're saying.
I don't think we would...
That's what you're saying. He had to know this was crack.
Well, and the judge said, no, you can't introduce that. So that was not introduced.
But your theory is that because intent is an issue in every case, it's always open to the government to go back over the defendant's history to show that he's a drug dealer and therefore he must know what these drugs are and that they're illegal and so on.
I believe that that's something that we could argue is a non-propensity reason for getting this evidence in.
Precisely, but it destroys the purpose of 404B because it allows all the evidence from which a normal person would infer propensity to come in. On the theory that the government can always prove you knew it was an illegal drug, as shown by the fact that you're a career drug dealer, right?
I don't, Your Honor, I guess if the criminal history involved, I mean, I doubt that you would bring in somebody's entire criminal history to show they knew it was an illegal drug. It would be sufficient to bring in
part of their criminal
evidence.
History.
Right, one conviction to say, look, if the guy
I know, but now but now even though the guy doesn't testify, at least one of his prior convictions is going to be admissible in every case to show that he knows that cocaine is illegal.
I don't think so, because you still have.
That's what you said. You can look at his history to show that he knows that these are illegal drugs.
That's correct, Your Honor, but you still have the Rule 403 balancing test. And the judge here said, no, I'm sorry. The probative value of that evidence was outweighed by the prejudicial effect. So I think the protection here is that 403 balancing test, which is what the court said. No, I'm not going to let that in. It's too prejudicial. And its probative value was not.
What's the probative value of events that occurred after the charged crimes?
Well, I believe the probative value of that, Your Honor, was to show that Mr. Powell not only intentionally distributed the drugs on the two charged occasions, but he continued to have the intent to distribute the drugs to Yarbrough on these other
Well, let's let indulge for a moment the hypothesis that, that maybe he wasn't guilty of the January 08 offenses, okay? I understand how evidence from fronting a small amount 8-9 months earlier in April or May of 2007 would be relevant. But what's the probative value of later developments that could have been caused by, you know, who knows how their relationship evolved?
Again, our position, Your Honor, was that it showed that he had the intent to distribute Yarbrough on.
How does what happened in March of 2008 reflect his intent in January of 2008?
Because if he's willing to do it in March, he was willing to do it or intentionally did it in January.
You really want to say that?
Well, I'm not arguing propensity. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to say that. I'm arguing
but, of course, that. That's what you
because
just argued, right?
But I.
That's precisely what you argued.
And that was, I did misspeak.
Well, you didn't misspeak. You spoke the truth.
What I meant to say was that his intent, the evidence of his intent to continue to sell to Yarbrough on these two dates showed that he had the intent to sell to Yarbrough on those two days and became particularly important in this case because the defense attorney argued that, look, Powell wasn't the person who actually sold the drugs here. So we thought it was particularly important in this case to show that, yes, Powell had dealt with Yarbrough intentionally selling him drugs and that he continued to do so even after these controlled buys.
Ms. Scott, could I ask you about one other issue here, which has to do with the questioning of your agent about part of the this is about the sentencing information. Your theory is that this is something that was unexpected and just blurted out by the witness that was improper. What I'd like to understand is, if that's so, what was the point of asking the witness that question at all?
Well, Your Honor, the first two sentences that he gave to his answer was actually what we were expecting. The interpretation that he would have got a substantial amount of time was not something that we were expecting. We were expecting him to testify that Powell admitted that he had made these two sales and, in fact, admitted that he would have continued selling drugs if not for what stopped our investigation, because our investigation was cut short. So
how was it cut short? What happened?
He was involved in a drive-by shooting involving a murder of a 12-year-old, so he went on the run, and of course after that we couldn't make any more controlled buys. So again, it was not, and even the defense attorney noted at trial twice. He said, you know, I'm not saying that this was solicited by the prosecution. He said it twice, that this was not a solicited comment. I had no idea the agent was going to bring up the amount of time he was facing. And I believe that that error, even if the court decides it is error, it would be harmless at best because there was a limited instruction given. If you look at the Perez-Leon case, it meets all the elements there. There was no other reference to sentencing made during the rest of the trial. The evidence of the defendant's guilt was overwhelming. The fact is the defendant's jail calls were almost the best evidence, you know, next to Yarbrough's testimony in the videotapes, because he confirmed exactly what Yarbrough testified to that had happened during these buys. You know, he was the one who said, hey, remember when Yarbrough came over? Remember when Yarbrough did that? Things like that.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Scott.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Brandt, would you like another minute? Or maybe he has unexpired time. Anyway, go ahead.
At some point, harmless error doesn't mean anything if there's so many errors that it takes limiting instructions to tell the jury to forget what they're hearing when it comes to finding that somebody's guilty. There was enough evidence here based upon the errors, including the errors, to find Mr. Powell guilty. What we're asking the court to find is if we take these errors out, there is no longer enough evidence. We cannot be confident in the jury's verdict anymore. When it comes to the question that the government asked Agent Kirkpatrick about the amount, you know, interpret this phone call for us, Trial transcript, volume 3, at page 83, the government already had its answer. Kirkpatrick had already testified, well, he's not worried about these two petty offenses. But it continued to ask, well, tell me what that phone call means. And defense counsel objects, saying, the jury knows what, the jury heard it. There's no secret code. They can figure out what it means. Let them do that. And instead, they ask the question, another objection, they get to ask the question again. When you ask it that many times and the phrase 8 years is in there and you already have the answer you want.
I understand how that's prejudicial.
The jury is hearing, it's only a couple of buys. And if it was only a couple of buys, he's saying it's only going to be he's only going to get a little bit of time, because if he would have been out for 8 years,
yes,
really would have had
that. That's telling the jury that this isn't really a serious offense. Whereas if he says, this is a terrible thing that I'm being accused of, then the jury will think, well, this is really a terrible person. We should certainly convict him.
But then the
jury's hardly going to have sympathy for the guy. So.
Then they're in the jury room, Your Honor, and they're all sitting around and trying to decide whether to find him guilty. And somebody says, well, let's not worry about it because he's only going to do a little bit of time, when in reality he's going to do 35 years. And there's no way for the jury to know, in reality here, he's going to do 35 years for what we're hearing the words petty offenses or petty buys.
And all he said, wasn't it, was that the more crimes you commit, the heavier your sentence?
And that spoke for itself. Why get the agent?
Well, I know, but everybody knows that's true.
So why ask the agent to tell us what that means?
Well, whatever. I don't understand how that hurts you. Because everybody knows that, the more crimes you commit, the heavier sentence you're likely to get.
I appreciate that position, Your Honor. I would submit that in the same way that this court said in Manganiellis that this is a classic case of prosecutorial overkill, this is a case of prosecutorial overkill. There was the evidence of intent was the phone calls themselves. There was no reason to go into prior bad acts. Intent was not an issue. He did not get on the stand. This court in Hicks said, this type of general intent crime, if the defendant doesn't put it at issue, you can't present it. Yet they did it three times here, and as the court has pointed out on two occasions, after the fact. We ask this court to find that his due process and jury trial rights were violated and to vacate and remand.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Brand. And you were appointed, were you not?
Not on this one, Your Honor.
Pardon?
Not on this one, Your Honor.
Oh, you were not. I'm sorry. But we thank you anyway, and we thank Ms. Scott.
Other occasions.